Going Linux, Episode 78. Linux File Systems, the Advanced Episode. Welcome to the Going Linux Podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
Currently, we create 3 episodes a month. We release listener feedback episodes at the beginning of each month and user experience episodes near the end. Following the third Tuesday of each month, we post Larry's appearances on the live Computer America show.
In the user experience episodes, we take 2 months to cover a topic, first an introduction, then an in-depth look at the Linux operating system and its applications.
In today's episode, we'll be discussing some of the more advanced things you can do with the Linux file system. We hope that you'll find this, and all of our episodes, helpful in learning about Linux and its applications, and using them to get things done.
Hey Tom, I know in our last episode, we talked about your experiences with the beta version of Skype, and I see that Skype still has that same version on their website for Linux, but Bill from Michigan had said that we left a bunch of information out of our discussion.
Yeah, he kind of took us to task.
Yeah, in his email he wrote this. He said, "What Skype beta version for Pete's sake? What system or OS for Pete's sake? When Larry mentioned Tom had to reload what for Pete's sake? Ubuntu? Skype? The Skype recorder? What version did Larry have that works for Pete's sake? Total non-clarity. Shame on you two."
Yeah, that's true. I was sort of ranting there. It was an impromptu rant, and I really was not prepared to go into detail. So you're right, Bill, and tell Pete, for his sake, that the beta version was Skype 2.1.0.47-1, and that is the horribly flawed version that I simply could not work with. And the version that I reinstalled that I got from Lori was 2.0.0.72, which works wonderfully. And I think I also had to reinstall a Skype recorder. Yeah, I don't remember now. It was a day of frustration. And from now on, when I talk about such things, I will try to provide more details. You're right. My fault.
Yeah, and as Bill said, we were bad reporters of the news. It wasn't meant to be news, but yeah, you're right. We should fill in the details just in case other people have the same issues. And thanks, Bill, for taking us to task on that one. So, Tom, let's get started.
Okay. Well, last time we gave you an overview of the file system structure in Linux, and we thought you might want to know what you can do with those files, how to look at which files are taking up the most space, and how to navigate around to find your files.
And in a GNOME desktop, your major graphical file management tool is the file browser, and in GNOME, it's called Nautilus. In KDE, it's Conqueror or Dolphin, depending on your distribution. And when using XFCE, there's Thunar. And for other desktops and window managers, there are other graphical file managers as well.
Right. Here's something to note, something that new Linux users might not realize. The file managers Larry listed tend to be the default ones installed with that particular desktop or window manager. You can install and use almost any graphical file manager with any desktop environment. So if, for example, Thunar is your favorite, but you like Ubuntu's desktop, you don't have to move to Xubuntu to get Thunar. Just install Thunar using the Synaptic Package Manager or apt-get and enjoy. One last file management tool that is common to all distributions is the command line, the terminal.
With that large number of file managers to choose from, we'll pick just one to use for our examples. Since, Tom, you and I are both familiar with Nautilus, let's use that for examples.
Okay, and even though our examples will be from Nautilus, most, if not all, of what we describe can also be done in other graphical file managers.
The online GNOME documentation at library.gnome.org is a great source of information if you're looking for a summary about the Nautilus file manager. And it describes a number of features, including its ability to connect with remote files and folders, as well as local ones, and talks about plugins. So let me take a moment and read to you what the documentation there says. Nautilus is able to display remote folders, just like folders on the local file system, giving users access to all their files everywhere with a single, consistent interface. Nautilus provides the utility to use plugins. Plugins can extend the file manager's functionality in a number of ways. For example, GNOME ships with a plugin to display the extra information about audio and video files, such as the codec used, the dimensions of the video, and artists and album of music files extracted from a CD. Another example, a Nautilus plugin could provide version control information on folders checked out from a version control system. Users could see directly in the file manager if a file is up to date or if changes have been made locally.
Nautilus can also add items to the context menu, the right-click menu, for files and folders. For example, File Roller, GNOME's archive file utility, adds an item to the context menu to extract archive files directly. Extra context menu items provide easy access to common operations on different types of files. Even without using plugins, Nautilus can do things like display thumbnails for files. Thumbnails show a preview of the file so it's easier to find the files you want. Oh, and we should mention that you can use Nautilus to browse the files and folders on your hard drive, as well as move, copy, and open them. Yes, all of these basic functions are there too.
Yes, and in Nautilus, when dragging files, by default, you'll be moving them if you drag them within the same physical hard drive. If you drag files between different hard drives, the default action is to copy the file. You'll see a little icon in the lower right-hand corner of your cursor that indicates whether you're copying or moving. An arrow means that you're moving the file. A plus sign means that you're copying it.
There is a way to tell Nautilus what you want to do when you drag a file or folder. If you hold down the Control key as you click and drag, it will force Nautilus to copy. Similarly, if you hold the Shift key as you click and drag, you'll force Nautilus to move the file or folder.
Also, if you use the Alt key after clicking the file and then dragging and dropping, Nautilus will display a little context menu asking you what you want to do. Your options are to copy or move the file or folder, create a link, or cancel the action. Make sure that you press the Alt key after you've clicked the mouse button, otherwise the whole window will move instead of just the file or folder.
And there are many, many more features of file browsers we could discuss, but we need to move on to some of the other advanced tools that we have available to us with Linux. Before we do, though, one last feature of Nautilus. If you right-click a file in Nautilus, you can select Properties, then the Permissions tab. Then you have the ability to set the file and folder permissions, graphically, using the drop-down list shown in that dialog box.
And have you ever wondered which folder and which files are taking up the most space on your hard drive? I have. It's usually when I've used a relatively small hard drive on a computer and now it's getting close to being full. I need to clear out some space fast and I'm looking for the largest files to delete so I can make some room to install a critical utility or program or ISO image or something like that.
Right, and doing that on a single folder or flash drive is relatively easy. Just display the contents in Nautilus and choose to sort by file size. But with a hard drive that contains many nested folders or directories, such a simple sorted list is not something you can do in Nautilus. Fortunately, there's a tool available in most distributions and included by default in Ubuntu that gives you a graphical chart of which files are taking up how much space on your drive. The Disk Usage Analyzer is available in Ubuntu's Applications, Accessories menu. Once the Disk Usage Analyzer scans your file system, it shows files in a ring graph or a tree map chart in a way that makes it easy to find files and see how much of your hard drive they occupy. The bigger the ring segment, the larger the file.
A similar tool, FileLight, is available from the package repositories. FileLight is significantly slower in scanning the file systems or a specific folder, and unlike Disk Usage Analyzer, it doesn't seem to have the ability to scan remote locations, like folders and files that are shared over a network. FileLight's advantage is that you don't have to scan anything before you begin to use it. Just click on a folder and FileLight will scan it automatically. All right, so we know how to use graphical tools to view, copy, move, open, and change the properties of files and folders in the Linux file system. Let's take a look at a tool that modifies the file system.
Okay, so let's look at gparted. That's G-P-A-R-T-E-D, and it's the GNOME partition editor. This tool is used by many distributions as you are installing the operating system. Gparted is used for creating, reorganizing, and deleting disk partitions. If you've ever used the Ubuntu Live CD, you may have noticed that it is available in the System Administration menu, labeled as Partition Editor. Once you've installed the operating system, however, you'll find that it is not installed by default. Of course, it's easy to get using the Package Manager and is very useful for managing disk partitions on flash drives, backup drives, external storage, and any device that contains a file system.
Before you use gparted or any other partitioning tool, you should know that modifying file systems on disk partitions can cause data loss. That's our fine print for the day, Tom.
Right.
So be sure that you have a backup of your data before you do anything. Assuming you have backed up your data, now you can use gparted to select a disk to view the partitions on a disk, reformat the partitions to just about any Windows or Linux file format, resize partitions by simply entering the partition size or by using a graphical drag and drop method.
Right, you can also use gparted to delete partitions, create new ones from empty space, and then format the partitions you create. Of course, for normal file systems, these functions require root or super user access to the disk, and also require that the disk be unmounted. This means that to work on your computer's main Linux partition, you can't be using a copy of gparted that you installed on that partition. You can reboot your computer from the Ubuntu Live CD and then work on your hard drive. Or you can use a Live CD dedicated to Linux utilities that helps you repair and rescue hard drives. The Nopix Linux distribution has been used for this purpose for years, but there are other partitioning utilities that can be installed on and then used from Live CDs, USB sticks, and hard drives. By the way, Nopix is spelled K-N-O-P-P-I-X.
Right, and you can find such a dedicated gparted distribution at gparted.sourceforge.net/livecd.php. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes, of course. Some other free disk or partition imaging tools which provide a live CD or a USB flash drive so that you don't have to install anything or configure anything are also available. Those include utilities such as CloneZilla, G4L, G4U, Part Image, and System Rescue CD. We'll have links to all of those in the show notes too. Tom, have you used gparted or any of these utilities?
Oh, sure, Larry. I've used gparted. I've used the System Rescue CD. Well, actually, just tried it out. I've used Nopix. And just yesterday, I wanted to make an ISO file of a CD, and I did it from the command line with DD is the command.
Uh-huh. We haven't mentioned any of the command line utilities you can use to manage your files and folders in Linux, but there are many of those as well. Where I've used Gparted in particular, I've used it for a number of things, not the least of which are preparing hard drives for use with Linux computers, but also formatting hard drives for installation of Windows and other operating systems too. But one of the things that I wanted to mention about partitioning in general is that I used to use FAT32 as the file system for flash drives, mainly because it was compatible with Linux and various flavors of Windows all the way back to Windows 98. But since Windows 98 and Windows 2000 are rare to find on computers anymore, I've started using NTFS as my default file system for flash drives for one reason in particular, and that is that when you are using FAT32 on a file system, mm-hmm. it has a file size limit, and many of the flash drives are much greater than 2 gigabytes these days. And when they were under 2 gigabytes, or when it was prohibitively expensive to purchase one that was over 2 gigabytes in size, it wasn't any problem because the largest file you could put on there was 2 gigabytes. But the file size limit, I think it's 4 gigabytes or something like that. If you are moving a file onto a flash drive that's been formatted FAT32, in Linux, it's just going to tell you that it can't copy the file. It doesn't give you any reason. And the real reason is it can't handle a file that big. If you've got a 32 gig flash drive or 64 or I think they're even larger than that now on sure. flash drives, but you could easily take an ISO image of a Linux distribution that's designed for a DVD and decide to put it on your flash drive to move it somewhere so you can burn it. Well, not if the flash drive is FAT32. It just won't take a file that big. NTFS will. And of course, you can format your flash drive ext2 or ext3 or 4 or whatever Linux file system you wanted to put on there. But unless you're sure that the Windows system that you're using it with has the utility installed for viewing ext formatted file systems, you're not going to be able to read it on your Windows system. So since most modern Linux distributions come with the ability to read NTFS partitions, that's the one that I've chosen to use for most of my flash drives, and it seems to work just fine. So that's how I use Gparted the most. And I've used, of course, Clonezilla to back up my system, and I've tried out G4L, and PartImage is essentially the same as the Gparted live DVD or live CD, and System Rescue CD I actually have on a thumb drive. So I've used all of those pretty much, and they work really well.
And boy, have flash drives come along in the last few years.
Oh, that's for sure.
If you'd have told me 5 years ago that I'd be walking around with a couple of 8 gigabyte drives in my pocket and not even know if they were in there, I'd have said, you're insane. 8 gigabytes.
Right, exactly. The 32 gig flash drive, which I have not purchased yet, but that size drive is bigger than the hard drive on some of the computers that were available only about 5 or 10 years ago.
Sure. My first hard drive on my first computer was 30 megabytes.
Yeah.
And that was huge.
Yes. And the computer salesperson said, that's more than you'd ever need.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm about out of stuff to say today, Larry. You got anything?
No, Tom, I think that about wraps it up. There's a lot of things we could have said, including utilities to use at the command line. But I think that has been done very well in the documentation. That's certainly been around a lot longer and covered a lot better than the graphical utilities for managing files. So I think we've done a good service here. What do you think?
Yeah, let's ask the users if there's something else you want us to talk about. Head on over to our Podcast Alley page, and there's an icon to get there. And vote for us, and at the same time, give us your suggestions for what you'd like us to talk about.
Yeah, and by the way, thanks, Tom, for providing a little edit to our icon on our homepage that takes you to Podcast Alley. Now it takes you directly to the page where you can vote instead of to our main page on Podcast Alley, and then you have to figure out where the link is to the vote and all of that.
Right, it's much easier. One click and you're there.
Yes, exactly. So thanks for that, Tom.
Sure.
Our next episode is a Computer America episode, my 18th appearance. Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations.
You can email us with comments, questions, and suggestions. And remember, if you have a topic suggestion, get on over to Podcast Alley.
And send us audio comments by email if you'd like to do so. We'll play it on the show. Our email is goinglinux@gmail.com. Follow our show updates on Twitter and Eidetica. We are Going Linux.
All one word. You can download episodes from the website, or you can use the Flash Player to play them right on the show notes page. And by the way, you don't have to join Twitter to get our tweets. You can just check out twitter.com/goinglinux, and there's an RSS feed.
You can also get future episodes of our podcast delivered directly to your computer automatically as soon as new podcast episodes are available. For instructions on how to subscribe to our podcast, go to subscribe.goinglinux.com. And until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.